Tonight it is our great pleasure to welcome to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Elliot Freed, for the first time to speak on the subject of the evening, Coming Home, a Dharma Talk. And he will be, of course, talking, as you see on the poster over there, he will be talking about using health crises as spiritual doorways. Mr. Freed studied in China with a Zen healing lineage, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that, if you're willing to talk about that tonight, but about many other things related to the topic I've just described. We are delighted to welcome him tonight, and please help me welcome him yourselves.
What are we talking about tonight? Any questions? What's that?
A good way to start. So
the title of the talk was is Using Health Crises as Spiritual Doorways. It's not really a new concept. I've read it in books in different places. But I've also kind of arrived at this realization through my own work. So what I'm going to do is break the talk up into a couple of different segments. I'm going to talk a little about my own history, just to give you an idea of how I got to this realization, and what it's based on. It's not just me kind of wandering around, coming up with stuff in my head. There's some grounding to what we're talking about today. And then I'll talk about kind of what that realization is, and how to use that, how a person can use that for their health, cultivation, their spiritual cultivation. And I'll also share some of the history, as Rob was asking about, the lineage that I've been studying with since 1999. And then we're actually going to do some practice. We're going to do a simple practice to kind of get into how to use this information, how to use this perspective to become aware of our actual self, not our ideas, not our thoughts, not our histories and our stories, but of our current, present existence and experience. And then questions and answers. And actually, I love questions, so if anybody ever has a question, you can raise your hand or just blurt it out.
Yes.
Do you have a question?
No, I just said you were asking for trouble. It just blurted out.
I have a question about the lighting, because as I'm looking at you, it's shining directly into my eyes. So I was wondering if there's any way to
which
adjust
one
that
is
spot.
There's a few.
Rob's on.
So I don't know. Is there a rheostat or anything for that?
Maybe shoot them out.
It's either on or off.
That's lovely. Right. Yeah. Me. I don't know if anybody else.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, thank you. That's very helpful.
So I got started in physical culture when I was about 14. I was in high school. And I got into weightlifting. And I really liked the idea it was like a realization that dawned on me that I had control of myself in some way. I could take my fate in my hands, if you will. And from there, I got into yoga. And yoga was really sort of a much more refined awareness of the body. And you hold positions, you move through positions, and you really develop an awareness of your physical, of your joints, of your muscles, of the position of different parts of your body in relationship to each other and how they move. And there's so many different movements. Any mathematicians, you can multiply the number of bones times the number of muscles, and you might get some idea of how many different movements we can make. And from there, I got into meditation. And with meditation, it's such a huge term. It's one of those words that almost doesn't have a meaning because it has so many meanings. But there's a type of meditation where one becomes aware of themselves, of their experience. And what I came to see was that all of this is connected. Our awareness of ourself is connected to our body. It's not a philosophy. It's not a set of thoughts. It's not a dogma. It's not a. It's just a present time experience. And from there I got into practicing medicine. I practiced Chinese medicine for a number of years, and I've worked with, between all the different types of healing that I've done, I've worked with over 1,000 people. So there's a lot of feedback. I've gotten a lot of feedback over the last decade or so of how people experience themselves, how we experience ourselves in a state of health, in a state of illness, or in that state kind of where we've got a few problems here and there. Most of us kind of have a couple of little problems. Some of us are dying of cancer. Some of us have serious other illnesses. Some of us are born with, I've worked with a 3-year-old who still can't lift his head up, and, you know, his eyes never actually really contact anything. So a lot of people in situations like that as well that have, you know, everybody here can walk pretty much. Everybody here has got 2 arms, and everybody's eyes more or less work. Not everybody is like that. So I've gotten a chance to work with people a little bit more in slightly more extreme situations than the average. And what I've found is that our awareness is our body. Our awareness is our body, and the state of our body is integrated with our awareness. There is no difference. There is no outside. There is nothing outside of our existence. In terms of my own health, my own state of existence, I receive information, so there is a connection to the outside world. But what I found in treating people is they would come and they would look for a treatment to get them better. They would look for some answer, some solution, some thing that was going to relieve the suffering. And anything that comes from outside, anything that I do to somebody else, anything that somebody else does to me, has a temporary impact, has a very temporary effect. And so even, as an I practice acupuncture, Chinese medicine, anybody here who knows acupuncturists, you know that it's very effective, in a lot of situations. And so I'm not discouraging people from getting medical care. We live in an integrated society. We need help. We need to work with each other, and those things do help us. But for a deeper level of healing and for a more comprehensive healing for people who aren't serviced by or don't get the results they're looking for through treatment, there's another way. There's another way to address illness and then also just the general condition of being. And that is essentially to bring one's awareness home, and not to be thinking about what's right, what's wrong. Those are useful discussions, I suppose, but they take our energy, our life force, out of us. And so I'm trying to think of an example. I had a patient who, 50-year-old woman, very concerned with the issue of right and wrong. And when she would come to me, she would talk about how wrong her husband always was and how right she was. And in Chinese medicine, we consider that to be kind of a function of the gallbladder. The gallbladder determines what's right and what's wrong. It's the same type of energy, the same type of energetic movement. And for us to sort of take that role on in our mind drains the energy out of the gallbladder. And so this woman was at the point where she could basically only eat rice and beans. She had studied nutrition, that's what it was. She had studied nutrition, and she was so concerned about what she was supposed to eat and what she wasn't supposed to eat that she had whittled it down to rice and beans. And if she ate anything else, she would get nauseous and have indigestion and have all sorts of other problems. And so that's a very clear example of how her obsession, if you will, drove the energy out of her gallbladder so she couldn't even digest food anymore. And, yes?
What if you no longer have a gallbladder, as I don't?
Well, you still have that energy circuit.
Oh, okay.
You still have that energy circuit. You still have that same type of energy moving through your body. So you probably experience, many people who have their gallbladders taken out, experience some physical change, but not everybody. For some people, it's almost exactly the same. I won't get into asking clinical questions and making a diagnosis, but I am curious. So the gallbladder itself actually has a sort of a complex spiritual nature. It's not strictly based on right and wrong, but that is one sort of function of it. And what I love about Chinese medicine is they actually have a map of all of these physical structures in our body, the energetic structures, which really are physical too, and how those relate to the different spiritual qualities of life. It's a beautiful map, and I know Melissa's familiar with it. Any more questions? Okay.
So the story you're telling us about the person that was obsessed with right and wrong, did she get back more back into balance or continue? Or?
Well, that was the thing. The acupuncture helped her a little bit, mm-hmm. but she was very stubborn about right and wrong. And there wasn't really much I could do about that. I tried to talk with her a little about it, but she wasn't having any of it. She was right. It was up to her to make that change. Like, her mind was driving the energy in a particular way, and putting an acupuncture needle in could change that very temporarily. Taking the gallbladder out can change that temporarily, but essentially the energy still wants to go in the same direction. Because the energy is really the root of consciousness. Or I should say the first manifestation of consciousness is the energy. And then from there, the energy forms the tissues. And the tissues form the organs, and the organs and the tissues together form the thoughts. This is essentially standard Chinese medicine. It's not exactly taught that way, but if you read into it a little bit, you see it.
Could you talk a little louder?
I'll try. I feel like I'm shouting. Can you scoot closer?
There's a seat right here.
Any other questions besides asking me to talk louder? Okay. So let's see. So the basic premise is that one can heal essentially any illness through this process of becoming self-aware, and it helps to know what's happening in the body. It helps to have maps, if you will. And anatomical maps, where the muscles and the bones are, so you can actually feel when you're it's kind of like walking in the woods. If you know where you're going, things clear up and you can see more clearly. So anatomical maps, where the muscles and bones and the organs are, as well as energetic maps, where the chakras are, where the meridians are. And then as you do this practice of becoming aware of yourself, you can use those as sort of pathways. If you can go explore a mountain, you might start on the path. You may not stay on the path the whole time, but you start on the path. Then you might explore, climb up this hill, climb down that hill, or go into that gully or ravine or something. But you start with the path. And it's interesting. All of this actually ties into a lot of the ancient spiritual teachings. Taoism, the path. Mm-hmm. The path and the energy. Buddhism, the light body, it's the study of the light body, which is kind of everywhere and everything, but it also has forms that we can pay attention to. So when they say everybody has a light body, everybody has a Buddha body, everybody has a light body. And as an acupuncturist, we put needles in it, and it changes the light body. And in the mind, when we talk about the mind and Buddhist practices and whatnot, it gets a little confusing. I was thinking about this on the way over here. You almost have to just do away with that word because it's been so misconstrued. So in Tai Chi we say, qi follows mind intention. So for instance, if you're going to push somebody, you put your mind intention to the wall, not to the person you're pushing, and then when you push on them, they go to the wall. That's how, if anybody's ever seen a Tai Chi demonstration or something like that where the master pushes the person really far, it's because they're not pushing the person, they're pushing their wrist to the wall. So we say qi follows mind intention, and then we also say qi is everything. So the mountains are qi, and their shape follows a mind intention. So there's a mind that's bigger than the mind of Eliot ordering a cup of tea, right? There's, if we're thinking about mind intention and how the world is formed by it, and how our experience is formed by it. And so our experience is really subject to this bigger mind intention, right? If we think there's a mind intention that formed the galaxy, the solar system, the planet, we're grateful for that, right? Most of us. So to say the mind, you have to be really careful when you're studying Buddhist texts and reading about Buddhism. They talk about the mind. It's not like I can just think whatever I want and get something. It doesn't quite work like that. But one can learn to sort of settle the mind, settle the awareness, bring it into the body, bring it into the conditions of our existence, and then work with those conditions. So if nobody has any questions, we'll just get straight to the practice. Unless anybody, does anybody have any questions?
How is the illness? It's just opening the door because it kind of brings you to that place of...
Right, excellent question.
What was the question?
How does illness play into this? If things are going fine, I'm not going to pay any attention, basically. As long as everything's going great, why change anything? Why bother? So it's usually when something is going wrong that we start to go, oh, what's happening? We start to ask questions. We start to think about, how could I be different? How could this be different?
So it'd be like a flat tire, it gets your attention, then you have to fix it.
Right. Or when the engine seizes up, you go, oh, I probably should have put oil in it.
Right.
As long as it's driving smooth, you don't think about it. So, no questions? Any more questions?
Just curious, how did you come to study Zen in the mountains of China?
I studied primarily actually in San Francisco. My teacher is from China and lived in various mountain monasteries. luck, I guess.
I thought Zen was more Japanese.
Well, Chan. Chan is the Chinese word. Dhyana is the Sanskrit word. English would be actually just meditation. Okay. Is how it translates directly, or deep meditation. And so my teacher is specifically from the Chan lineage. And I guess Rob was asking about that. So does anybody want to hear the story of this Chan lineage before we get started? Okay.
Yeah.
So about 800 years ago, there was a monk who was the head abbot of a Taoist monastery in Zhejiang province, on sort of the eastern coast of China, near Shanghai. And he went on walkabout. He walked out of the monastery and just went walking around China for a number of years. And he ended up on top of Ame Mountain, which is in Sichuan province, kind of in the southwest. And actually, the peak looks down onto the Tibetan Plateau on one side, and then down onto the Yangtze River valley on the other side. And I've been there, but it's cloudy. You can't, almost probably 2 days a year, you can actually see anything. And so he sat on the mountaintop for some undisclosed period of time, received teachings from all kinds of different beings, and then established a monastery and took the name White Cloud, or by the Chinese is Bai Yun. And over the years, Ame has become one of the four main Buddhist mountains in China. And in particular, they're known for their healing practices. And there are a lot of herbs that are grown on Ame Mountain that aren't really grown anywhere else. And it's kind of fun to sort of walk up the mountain, and you just come across this little lean-to with a guy with a bunch of herbs in different baskets and stuff. Like, it's a neat place. But so the lineage was passed from one lineage holder to the next. He would have monks and nuns that he would teach, but he would have one person that he would pass the entire lineage to. And for instance, when White Cloud passed away, his student became the next lineage holder. And so in 1911, Master Yong Nian was the 11th lineage holder. And he had a vision that China was entering a period of chaos. which anybody who knows history knows that his vision was accurate. And he saw that the monastery wasn't going to survive. And then he also recognized that the people needed the benefit of the knowledge and the practices cultivated in the monastery. And so in the monastery, what they were doing is they were cultivating enlightenment, which is actually not so mysterious. Enlightenment is to merge one's awareness with the light body. And through that, we recognize that the light body is one continuous light. So it's actually not a complex thing. It's fairly simple. So they were doing this practice, or doing a set of practices and developing different practices to do this. And as one goes through this process, all the karmic illnesses arise. And so you have to learn to heal each of these illnesses, in one after the other. And so they became very, very good and talented at healing illnesses for themselves, but then also for, you know, the people living in the area. So Master Yongyan recognized that it was time to take these teachings to a broader group of people and let the people of China benefit from this knowledge. So he took on a student who actually was a general in the Nationalist Army. His name was General Zhou, Z-H-O-U. And General Zhou had been right next to a landmine when it exploded, and his liver was, he was having a lot of liver troubles due to that. And Master Yongyan healed him, and Master Zhou said, okay, I want to study with you. So when Master Yongyan passed away, actually, while Master Yongyan was still alive, the monastery was destroyed. In the 1940s. So he went off into the mountains near Kanding, and Master General Zhou, later became Master Zhou, traveled around China healing and practicing Qigong and meditation and teaching people. And in 1958, he went into a monastery in Beijing where a man named Master Juzan lived. And he was essentially the Dalai Lama of China, but with no political power, no political clout. And he spent the Cultural Revolution living in prison. But while he was there, he started dreaming about my teacher. And my teacher, Master Fu, we call him, Teacher Fu. And he, at the age of 6, he started having dreams about Master Juzan. He'd never met him. At the age of 26, he walked into a friend of his took him into this temple in Beijing where Master Ju was. And Master Ju looks at him and said, ah, you've arrived, we can begin. And so for the next 8 years, Master Fu lived, and he'd already studied and practiced medicine and martial arts and all the various arts that go into this process. And then he spent 8 years in the monastery with Master Ju until Master Ju passed away. And near the beginning of their relationship, Master Fu asked Master Ju, what can I do to pay for this? And Master Ju said, no money. You have to go to America and teach. And I sometimes still think that Master Fu would have rather paid money. But he paid the price. He paid the tuition. And I definitely feel like I'm the beneficiary of that. And it's nice because all the past masters are still around. When I meditate, I get to meet them, and they come and they remove obstacles. And that's primarily Master Fu will do that, but sometimes some of the other lineage holders will show up, and that's... it's good to have that. Yeah. There's a lot of obstacles. I'm very attached to my mind. So, any more questions?
Is that written down in any books about Chinese medicine? Or have you written a book?
I have not written a book. Well, I've written a few. I don't have any for sale, though. But I have not written that story down. It is, parts of it are written in different places. It's a pretty straightforward story, the way I tell it. So, everybody ready to meditate? Everybody ready to go home? All right. So we're going to do a very simple practice. Yeah, it's nice to put your feet on the floor or however you're comfortable, really, is an important thing. rather than explain the whole practice in the beginning, I'll just lead us through it step by step. So if you want, you can close your eyes or you can keep them open. Whatever's comfortable for now, just get comfortable. Feel your breath. A spot on the wall. Don't look at me. Look at something back here. And you pick an area, maybe the size of a quarter or a dime, or however big or small you like. And just sort of focus on it very loosely. Really, you want to feel as if the information is arriving at your eyes. You don't want your eyes to go out to grasp the information. Just let it arrive. Feel your eyes relax. Do try and focus. Look at the nuance, look at the shadow, the color, the texture. Bless you. Slowly going to draw our focus back towards the surface of our own face. So from wherever that point is, slowly bring your focus back, very slowly. You can stop for a little while in different parts. And at first it might look as if the thing you've been looking at is getting blurry. But actually look at the space between you and the object. You might see colors, you might see circles, you might see lines or tracers or all kinds of different things. Just focus on the space between you and the object. Slowly drawing your focus closer. You don't want to go cross-eyed. You feel yourself starting to go cross-eyed. You can close your eyes and let that focus enter all the way into the center of your head. Again, you're not really turning your eyes to look at the center of your head. You're just becoming aware of the sensation in there. Aware of the space. Space in your head. And when you start to think about things, return your awareness to that space in the center of your head. awareness of the space. Allow it to meander through your body. Whatever area of your body calls to you, allow your awareness to go there. Find a place where it seems like there is no space. Just stay there for a little while. Look a little closer. You can bring in a little bit of color to these different spaces. And the colors are lavender, gold, white. slowly bring your awareness back into the center of your head, spaciousness in the center of your head. And to your breathing. Notice your breathing.
I can't hear you.
Feel your breathing. Three times, circle your hands back towards yourself. Rub your palms together. Place them over your eyes. Open your eyes. And rub your face and your head. Rub your arms and your body a little bit. It's always good to end with a little gratitude. So as one does this practice more and more, you become more aware of what's happening in your body. You can learn to guide the energy through the meridians. You can learn to guide the energy to different organs. There's actually a Russian doctor who's having people regenerate organs through meditation. So as you become more and more aware, you have more and more relationship with your body, with your direct experience. This is all done very directly, very immediately. So if anybody has a particular illness, there's a good likelihood that the thoughts that kept coming up in your head might be directly connected. They might be driving the energy in some way. It's causing that particular illness, the gallbladder, the leg, whatever it may be. And so another way of healing oneself is to open up those ideas, let them go, and then you can drive the energy appropriately. You get the energy into the meridian where it belongs, into the tissue where it belongs. It's a difficult process. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of dedication. First one has to develop kind of a feeling for oneself. And then you also have to get the maps. You have to know what the maps are, where the energy moves, how the different thoughts relate to the different conditions or the different illnesses. But once you, as you gather that information, you can do this work. And the hardest part is much of who we think who we are is actually these ideas that drive the energy out of its natural course. And when we let go of who we think we are, then the energy just kind of falls back home. That's the coming home part. The energy goes back to where it naturally is. Questions?
What about chakra meditation? Do you find that has any value in healing?
Yeah. I mean, the chakras are seven in the body. They're seven different kind of... essentially, many of our tissues run this way, and the chakras are seven places where they go this way. Here we have the diaphragm, here we have the pelvic floor, here we have the cranial roof. So we have all these tissues that go this way, and the chakras are the place that are like the crossroads, in a sense. And so you can find a lot of binding at the crossroads, a lot of traffic jams at the different tissue crossroads. And so by focusing on the chakras, by becoming aware of them, by opening up communication with them. It's like any relationship. If you have a relationship with a person and you're both like this, you're not going to get anywhere. But if you sort of open up and relax and you let them speak and you hear what they say and you don't respond, it's the same thing with your chakra, for instance. If you're having trouble with your sixth chakra, you can just sort of you can do this meditation practice. You might find yourself there and just listen to what it says. Don't argue with it. You know, let it speak. And then have a friendly conversation with it. And if there's a place where there's a lot of trouble, you're probably having an unfriendly conversation with yourself. Mm-hmm. So,
I feel like I want to know, like I came specifically because I wanted to come to that. I have a head-on car collision about 25 years ago, and I feel like I'm stuck. I've been stuck for years. And I don't know, and I've gone to I've had readings, I've had all kind of alternative doctors help try down me and stuff. And I just don't know, I haven't been able to get it. It's so hard for me to like myself because my disability, I can't get a job. I've been trying for years and years. I can't write, I can't do anything with this hand. I have traumatic brain injury. I'm not fast, I'm very intelligent, but I don't process. By the time a joke is told, I get it. About people who hear me laughing about my name Slater. I don't have a car, I've never had a cell phone. I live here specifically because I needed a small place. But I don't like it because I'm more of a city girl. I need to be around a lot of things. And I just feel like I'm stuck. I just feel like, is anything ever going to change? I want someone to make a difference, say something that affects me. I don't know. I feel like I need to hear something that somebody cares about. I need to feel compassion, and I don't feel it. And I feel like I can't find it anywhere. I'm talking to you like, yeah. I need some God answers, but I treat everyone like, aren't you God?
you have a lot to meditate on.
I've been meditating since I was 23. I'm 60 now, so maybe I need to change my meditation.
I don't know either. There's a lot of details. I mean, kind of the whole point of this talk is that if one is not satisfied with the outside approach, one can learn the inside approach. And I've barely glossed over the surface of this practice in this school that I've studied in. It's just the most simple introduction. There are so many practices of guiding the energy through the body, of all kinds, of all sorts, that can't be taught in an hour-long discussion. But all of them require a connection with oneself, a calm awareness of oneself. And that's kind of what we started with today. I'm sorry I'm not going to solve all your problems this evening. Well, I'm actually not really sorry about it, but it's the way it is.
So I send my awareness down into the part of my body that needs healing. And then what? Just look around? Or what?
I mean, in a sense, our body's like a foreign country. Mm-hmm. Really.
Yeah.
Just go check it out.
I've ignored mine most of my life. This is very different.
So how does this differ from Qigong?
This would be called, in Qigong, there's two kinds of Qigong. There's an infinite number of kinds of Qigong. But one way of classifying it is into inner and outer Qigong. Qi is vital energy, life force. Gong is cultivation. It's a relatively new term. I mean, it showed up once in the literature a couple thousand years ago and then disappeared until about 50 years ago. So it's a relatively new term. But it's basically just life force cultivation, and there's external and there's internal. And so external is there's a movement involved, the body is moving, and internal is one is moving the energy within the body. And if you practice enough or you have the right teacher, they'll tell you even when you're doing the external Qigong, really the internal is the important one. But what I found, the reason I start with this practice, is if we're not calm and centered and relaxed and aware of our body, and we're trying to do an internal Qigong where we're moving the energy through different places, it's kind of like one of those movies where they drive a big truck right over all the cars. You know, like you have to kind of clear the road a little bit. I don't know if that analogy works very well, but you have to get calm, centered, and relaxed. Otherwise, you're just like forcing yourself into something, and there's going to be a repercussion down the road. What I teach first is this practice of just settling down a little bit, and then you can get into more of the intricate Qigong forms. Does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. I come from the Japanese Zen tradition, and I kind of understood that this internal Qigong, or however you want to call it, was part of the practices in Chan or Chan, however mm-hmm. you want to call it, and that somehow that didn't get to Japan. And thus, not so easily to America, since most of the lineage has come from Japan.
Right.
And there are some people who are saying, you know, we need to look at what got left behind.
Yeah.
Because it's a very important part of.
Right. If you just sit quietly for a long time, I don't know what's going to happen, but. That's not what they were doing in the monasteries back in the day. They were moving, they were working with the light body. They were cultivating the light body. Yeah.
Well, there's that great story of Hakulin, who many of the monks in Japan did get very sick. And none could help him. And he went to a Taoist master from mm-hmm. China, who was in Japan, to learn exactly this.
Right. And my teacher actually talks about the influence, the relationship between, Buddhism and Taoism, and how in Taoism there was the focus was on health and strength and power and things like that. So there was a great awareness of the physical body, of the subtle energy within the physical body, or the light body. But what Buddhism brought was a kind of a gentleness and an openness. And a lot of the Taoist practices, it was still turning the wheel. There was still a lot of intention, a lot of greed. So in a sense, the big thing Buddhists brought was the notion of the four greeds mm-hmm. and how that really is the root of suffering.
So was this practice, the practice of the body, knowing the body, what is that, Taoism? Is that Taoism?
Yeah, I mean, Chan is a combination of Taoism and Buddhism.
Like what you do, what is that called?
Chan meditation. Chan meditation. But it's not just sitting. The Japanese got into the just sitting. But in the Chinese monasteries, there was a lot of Qigong, basically.
Movement.
Part of it was movement, the external Qigong, and part of it was visualizing or talking with the body or listening to the body. Somebody said this was on Facebook a little while ago, praying is talking to God, meditating is listening.
Well, maybe you can give me some guidance, like when my body feels like it feels like there's a constant, my body feels a lot of numbness. Mm. So I, in a way, when I don't feel numb, I feel like an electrical current. And so I've kind of ignored, as this one woman was saying, I've kind of ignored how my body feels. So I can go inside. I mean, I've been practicing meditation for so long but then after my accident, which was about 25 years ago, I've stopped trying to, I've ignored my body. I just have a not myself feeling. And maybe I should let myself feel.
That's the fundamental purpose of the practice we just did, is to feel the body. It's the only place we live. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it's difficult. It's difficult if there's a lot of pain. If there's a lot of physical pain or emotional pain or some type of pain, it's very difficult.
It's not like, yes, what I feel is in pain is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That, like my mom.
Yeah. Most people I know are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
Have you had experience of dreaming of curing yourself of ailments?
I have a lot of dreams. I haven't recorded them all. Have you?
Well, it just came to me that might be a way of healing. I have some things that I need to work on, and would seem, and I'm asking your opinion on it, that if your intention would be in a dream to then go into the different parts of the body, that you could set it up ahead of time as we're doing sort of with this, but maybe not have to take 10 or 12 years to and then having in the dream be the surgeon for your...
So you want the quick way?
Well, before I die.
I don't know the quick way. I don't know the quick way, but these practices definitely can carry over. You can do them before you go to bed, and then try and maintain the awareness part either in the center of the head, or kind of right here, or in the center of the lower abdomen.
Right.
When you go to sleep, try and maintain that awareness, and see what happens.
Right. Thank you.
See what happens. Yeah. But you can also do the slow way.
I've done the slow way, but I think anything is possible, and that would be a way to not trick yourself, but a way to tap into the higher consciousness that you have, that anyone has.
Yeah. What's interesting with the higher consciousness concept?
Would your flin go wandering?
Yeah.
If you let it loose too much?
Yeah. In Chinese medicine, we talk about the five souls, and one of them is the ethereal soul, or the hun, which is housed in the liver. And what's interesting is a lot of psychic people, they have liver troubles because their soul, their ethereal soul, is traveling all the time, and that drains their liver. Or there can be kind of a constitutional relationship there, a constitutional factor. And so I think a lot of people who are trying to get to their higher self, whatever, their soul is traveling out. And what we actually have to do is go back in. The doorway between everything, the sort of the universal energy and the individuated experience of being human, is actually right down in the center of the abdomen. It's the lower dantian. And that's the seat of the will. And the will draws the energy of the universe and gives it a form. Mm-hmm. And so in order to, we can try and get high, but that's like taking a drug. In order to get enlightened, in order to get our consciousness back to that universal consciousness, we actually do it through here. And there's a lot of nasty stuff in there, man.
So that kind of brings me to my question. Doctors and some people that are out saying that pain is our friend, pain is our teacher. So when you go in this practice and do the meditation, will you go search for the pain? Will you embrace the pain? What kind of relationship would they recommend for?
I would say let the pain come to you. I don't want to go out and like.
Go looking for it. It'll be right there.
I'll end up like getting more than is really mine, you know. Yeah, it's just kind of there. Like we don't need to go too far to find it.
Yeah.
Are you?
I like speaking of the body of language and the conversational body. And I think very often that it can be our language that's sick. And it can be our conversational life that's sick. Did you ever hear the saying I think it's a native saying that if the individual is sick, heal the village. It has to do with looking for a larger body, a body that we share. And our conversational body is certainly a body that we share. And bringing the healing to that, and then kind of inheriting its healing.
I hear what you're saying. You're saying that if we change the way we converse, if we change our dialogue in some way, our conversation.
Well, it has to do with defining the body that we share.
Defining the body that we share.
And then giving attention to that.
Okay. So what you're talking about is significantly different from what I'm talking about. I'd be interested if you relate them.
But they're related. They're very much related.
How so?
Could the Shen go to the...
What's
the
that?
The there's some Taoist, like... Or, and it does it relate in the chakra thing where you relate to other people up in the eighth? See, it is different. I don't see where it's the same.
I'm not sure.
I just thought it's really good.
What I have found, take this for what it's worth, is that our words are the end result of a long process. Our conversation, if you will, our thoughts, even before the conversation. And it's interesting, scientists have found this as well. Science is fun. But they've discovered that the brain actually fires a long time before we consciously recognize that we're making a decision. So there's the will, the energy, and the matter, and then we say something about it.
But that word is an embodiment of that whole process.
Right. If we work on the word level and try and change the words, it's like we're repainting the flowers on the tree and trying to change the nature of the tree. We have to work backwards. We can use the words to recognize the thought. We can use the thought to recognize the physical experience or the emotion, the physical experience. We can use the physical experience to recognize the energy. And we can use the energy to recognize the will. I mean, they're all connected. But in the end, it's kind of our own will that has to change. And it's the... We basically work on ourselves. If we're trying to get other people to change, like there's something wrong with the social conversation, then what we're doing is we're taking our energy and we're putting it outside of ourselves. And in a sense, that's almost like an attack.
Certainly a waste.
And so what this practice is about taking all that energy back into oneself, becoming aware first of the body, and then as we become aware of the body, we bring harmony to the body. As our awareness in the body opens up, we bring harmony to our own physical sense of being. And when we experience that harmony inside of ourselves, then our words are softer, gentler, kinder. Does that make sense?
You have a healing practice, though, right? And you treat people who come to you. If I came to you with a long-standing medical problem, how would you do it? Would you work with acupuncture, you work with herbs, you work with meditation instruction?
Each person's different. Each person's different. Start by talking, and then see what's needed. Sometimes people who have long-standing problems recover very quickly, and some people who have very short-standing problems take a long time to recover. It's very complex. I don't have one protocol that I follow. Each person's very different.
But that doesn't give me any idea what you can do for me. I mean, I know if I go to an acupuncturist, I will get acupuncture. If I go to an herbalist, they'll try to treat it with herbs. There are acupuncturists also often work with herbs. If I go to a meditation teacher, I'll learn to, go within. But you're saying it just first you talk to the person and then try to see
I'll describe my process to you a little bit.
Okay.
What I'm working with. Hold on a second. I want to see if we're finished with this show over here.
I thought we were.
I'm not sure if we were or not. Did I answer your question sufficiently or address your...
Well, I think it's a bigger conversation.
Yeah.
Because I live very much the process through which what's going on inside of me becomes a word. So I don't separate my actual work and my actual speaking from that process. In fact, I think separating the word from the process is a part of the problem.
Okay. Well, so what you're talking about is something different from what I'm talking about, and that's fine.
Yeah.
If you're interested, you can try doing what we did tonight and see how that changes things for you. And if not, you don't have to. Does that resolve that?
That's
I'd be happy to talk more, but not right now. Maybe you have another question. So, what I do when somebody comes in is I listen to them talk for a little bit, and I just look at the energy. All the experiences that we were having when we were doing the meditation practice was getting in touch with our physical body and its vibrations now. And that all spreads out from us. And that essentially is our relationship to other people. It's not what we say, it's how we vibrate. And so when somebody comes to me for healing work, I experience that vibration, and I work with that vibration. And there are different ways of doing that. But at the same time, at the end of the day, the will is... I mean, the three factors of existence are time, space, and will. And so our will is what forms our experience of time and space within the context of which we're born. I don't form the planet, but within the context in which I live, my will forms my experience. And so I can work with somebody's energy. I can work with herbs or acupuncture or whatnot. But in the end, if it's really a deep-seated physical ailment, probably it's going to have to get down to the level of the will. And I can help somebody get there, but it's not always easy, or rarely.
It's not what?
It's not always easy.
It's usually sometimes profound.
What's that?
It's usually profound.
Could be.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes I'm amazed at how quickly things change. And sometimes I'm amazed at how slowly they change. So, I mean, like I said, I've worked with a lot of people, and everybody's so different that I don't bring a template. I work on this level of being directly aware.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've meditated quite a few years, and I find that. Like just when we start doing this exercise, quite often my body will jolt. It's almost like energy will start moving somewhere and explode into a different area.
Mm-hmm.
And so it always seems to be, when I'm kind of moving energy up or whatever, there always seems to be like some kind of jolt. Or do you have any comments on that, or have you had that experience?
Did you have a really strong trauma some time ago?
Well, what I'm thinking of is when I was about 10 years old, I fell off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And landed kind of like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I've been to chiropractors and that kind of thing, so I'm pretty in line most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You think it might stem from that?
Yeah, I mean, the chiropractor works with the bones, and they get those bones in line, but there are millions of layers of tissue in the body, if not billions or more, I don't know. So there's a lot of layers of tissue. And the trauma can be stored in any one of those layers of tissue, or 200,000 of them, or however many. So getting the bones in line is helpful,
mm-hmm.
but the trauma can still be stored in there, and it sounds like that's kind of what's happening. Like, that trauma is still stuck there, and when you try to start to move the energy up, it hits it. So a way of working with that would be, instead of directing the energy there, just do this sort of practice where you're just becoming aware, and you can approach that spot, but don't do anything to it. Just, you can ask it a question. You can kind of look at it, sort of walk around it, if you will, more metaphorically. Check it out. Develop a relationship with it. But don't force it.
Yeah, I don't really force it anymore. I just observe.
Yeah.
It goes where it goes.
Yeah.
But it does kind of create these jolts of concern.
Yeah.
Well, in Tibetan Buddhism, we do a practice called Chonglin,
mm-hmm.
which is drawing in negative energy, changing it, and sending with someone else or with yourself. Would something like this work with my own physical ailment, where getting to know it and then maybe absorbing the negative energy of it and changing it?
Yeah, with Tonglen, you don't actually want to take somebody else's energy.
Oh, yeah. Take their negativity.
Some people may say that, but
what
it is if, say, you and I have an interaction and I experience some negative energy coming from you, it's actually my experience.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm defining. I'm just absorbing whatever.
Yeah. I'm not sure who you learned to learn from, but I would be very careful of taking other people's energy.
I've never done.
Well, then don't be. the basic concept of Tonglen is actually that you're really working with your own energy.
That's right.
The basic concept of Tonglen is you're really working with your own energy. And it's a subject-object relationship. You're working with, in part, subject-object conceptualization. You bring the energy in. I don't know what you do to transform it in your Tonglen practice.
White lightning, heart, whatever.
Okay. In the Taoist practices or the Chan practices, you actually bring it into the lower Dantian, because the lower Dantian is the place that connects with the universal energy. I mean, in a sense, the universal energy is everywhere.
Right.
But the seat of our will is in the lower Dantian.
Cool, I'll use that.
And so that's like the doorway between the universal energy and our... In the sense that it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything is universal energy.
Yeah.
But for the human experience, the doorway is the lower Dantian. So that would be another way of looking at the Tonglen practice. And then the white light is useful, but in the end it's the compassion that's the important thing. It's the equanimity, bodhicitta. So the white light is kind of like the physical representation of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Question: when you're doing the working with the light body, and is there a goal or an experience, or so if you were a monk meditating for many years, what would be an enlightenment? Is that the
So the goal is to merge one's conscious awareness with their light body. So if I'm a monk meditating on a mountain trying to attain enlightenment, I'm merging my conscious awareness with my light body. I'm transforming the darkness within my light body into light, and I'm recognizing the continuity of the light which makes up my light body.
Tell me what you mean exactly by light body.
Well, if I lost 30 pounds, it'd be easier.
I've been practicing for a long time.
Okay. Well, Buddhism is light. Buddhism basically means light. The cultivation of light.
So the light body versus our other body, our dense body, our heavy body.
Even our dense body is really our light body. It's all light. It's all light. But it does sort of coagulate, if you will. Or it does condense.
The body conducts light through it. Is that, are the conducting pathways
meridians?
Are those are there so many of them that they make a big old light body?
hold on a second. This is the light body. This is the light body. That is the light body.
So we have no other body but the light body.
Basically, yeah.
Isn't it kind of like an electrical circuitry or something?
That's one way. That's a very that's yeah. That's one
like
way of looking
chi,
at it. I guess.
Like
so the meridians are kind of central channels of light. But even this is, I mean, everything is the same energy, and it condenses and it spreads out. It rises up, it falls down, it moves. And so the idea of a Buddhist practice, of Zen or Chan practice in particular, is to become aware of that light. It's not easy. My teacher's basic practice actually is just looking at a white light on your forehead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes a few decades to make headway. And you need a good teacher that can remove the obstructions.
Very different from just sitting.
Right. I think a lot of actually the Zen that came to this country was really more just Japanese militarism than conformity and actual practice. But people will be upset at me for saying that. Hold on a second.
So,
wait, what person
too.
Next to you? The woman next to you is.
I just wanted to help them because the word enlightenment is really like an appropriate term for how it actually feels. And like how I describe it to other people, if they try to ask me how that feels, is where you come to a place where my best description is everything agrees. You're in agreement with all the truth everywhere. No one's blocking anybody. You can feel it, and it's light. You're bright inside and outside. From my experience, it's a temporary thing. It's not something you can acquire and sort of live with. You get it for a little bit, and you're grateful. But I just wanted to say, so trying to understand, why is it light? Is it a meridian? All these words and concepts. When it descends upon you, it feels, you shut your eyes, and you're shiny inside and out.
I just wondered if the other body might be illusion.
What's illusion?
When she was asking what's the other body, there's the light body, what's the other one? I just wondered if the other one is that.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the Nomi Dantian, this is actually scientifically dependent for gravity.
Right.
But my experience maybe is that it's actually a little different for women than men.
That would make sense.
So the womb space.
Yeah.
Has your teacher ever talked about that?
He doesn't give an exact location.
But I mean, even just the energetic.
I'm not sure what you mean by the energetic space. He doesn't talk a lot about it, just become aware of it. And there is a saying in Taoism, once you find your lower Dantian, you'll never be the same. From moment to moment, you'll never be the same, so it's a tricky one, but yeah, I imagine it would be in a different place for different people. I'm a man, so I relate to it that way.
Well, there was some Taoist text that actually said that that women had to do this differently, and that it actually could injure, somebody's practice could injure them because it was different for women.
Right, so a lot of the In Chinese culture in general, they're very, like the teacher says do something and do something. And they don't necessarily explain why. Mm. And actually, it's interesting. I mean, part of that, I think, comes from just the language. Like, you just have to learn to write the characters. You know, learn 4,000 of them by the time you're 18, you know. So you do what the teacher says. but, so they don't really discuss why a lot. And so if the teacher is saying to the students, do it this way, this is the way that men do it, and a woman does it exactly the same way, there will be a problem. And that's part of why I like to start with this practice of just learning to feel ourselves. Learn to feel where your own lower dantian is. And then instead of doing it exactly 3 finger widths below the belly button, and 2 thumbs, or 1.5 thumbs in front of the spine, you just know where it is. And that sort of addresses that problem, I think. Do you think?
Yeah, I think in the sense of exploring for yourself and taking your own authority, which is not so. We inherited these spiritual practices from Confucian society and from a different way of being, and there's been a lots of translation.
Right, right. a lot of cultural issues. At the same time, don't knock it. I mean, the teaching is really valuable.
Yeah. Oh,
to know how to move the energy through those meridians and all that stuff is very valuable, yeah.
I just have a question about your question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you mean like the quality of the energy you think is different for women than men, or are we thinking specifically of location?
Probably both.
That's what I thought that there was a quality you were also.
Yeah, Chinese medicine, they say it very simply. Women are more yin, men are more yang.
What?
Women are more yin and men are more yang. Well, how is that defined? Well, it just is. You have another one?
Yeah, you mentioned something, the continuity of the light.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain that a little?
It's one light.
Oh, that, okay.
One light. Everything is made of the same light, of the same fabric.
Yeah. I just thought you might have something more specific.
Long Chen Pa talks about it.
What's that?
Long Chen Pa talks about it beautifully.
What is it?
Long Chen, Longchen, Rabjan. Long Chen Rabjan, 14th century Tibetan monk. He describes the indescribable perfectly.
Oh, cool.
So if Dex has this, this thing that's stuck, maybe when he was 10,
mm-hmm.
in his body, the body is a memory, just like a record has 8 or 10 songs on it in the old days. That
mm-hmm.
So then, could he then, he took it in through an experience, could he then withdraw it from his cells, from his consciousness by different methods? Then?
Yeah. And doing this, the practice we started with is a good way. And then there would be other practices that one can do to move the energy in different ways. And I would need to know more specifically about what happened with you and how to do that and which practices would be good for you. I would need to sit and talk with you about it for a while. And maybe experiment, try this practice, try that practice, see what happens.
Just try anything?
Well, not just try anything. Life's an experiment, right?
Yeah.
Can you predict the future?
Is that being careful?
No. No. That's being honest. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So are we running down on time here? Or?
We should maybe one more question.
Okay. We've got the last question.
How about you? Do you have a question for us?
I got a lot of questions. Thank you all. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for the questions. I love that discussion.
Thank you.
You could tell us about your practice, where you're located, if we want to talk to you further.
Okay.
We can do an ad.
What's that?
We can do a little ad, right?
Okay, can I do a little ad?
Is that okay?
Of course. Well,
okay.
Spread your contact information.
Okay, yeah, I have some business cards. You're welcome to talk to me. I'm actually moving to Bellingham this weekend, Bellingham, Washington.
Nice.
But I do distance healings now, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody on the phone about any of this wonderful conversation. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.